It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
Pick Six, sponsored by Affinity Whole Health. Visit feelgreatillinois.com like I did to learn more about their testosterone therapy or their weight loss options. Were you pleased to see some of the Bears put respect on the team's Hall of Fame 2044 class on Thursday night? Javon Dexter arriving at the stadium in a McMichael jersey. Rome Odunze, Jaquan Brisker wearing Devin Hester jerseys. Cole Kmet rocking a Julius Peppers jersey. Do you believe the young guys enjoyed their Hall of Fame tour at the Pro Football Hall of Fame, guided by our guest later this morning, Jimbo Covert, and featuring a speech from Devin Hester, also a guest of Mully and Haw's this morning? Was this a good time for everyone?
Let me tell you something. I mean, I enjoyed it so much that I know they enjoyed it, because we endured it. There was a pretty heavy crowd of people, and I think a private tour of the Pro Football Hall of Fame, I'm sure it was eye-opening. It was a chance to kind of emphasize that the Bears owned the nation, you know, they thrilled the nation with the T formation, that they were here in the 1940s and they won title after title. It's something that they've never been able to replicate, and it was an unbelievable era, and they are loaded. The Hall of Fame loaded with Bears, loaded with all sorts of things, you know. I mean, the reason this is in Canton, Ohio, is because this is where the Hupmobile car dealership was, where they started the Hall of Fame. And George Halas, of course, was there, and they began the Decatur Staleys. And this dates back to the 1920s, and the Bears are part of the history of the NFL. And it's like a giant has been awakened.
So much here, even. Yeah.
Oh, there's so many Hall of Famers from
Chicago.
How
about the Wi-Fi password last night?
That Wi-Fi password last night was George Halas 24.
How about that?
David's like, what is that password? And I'm like, it's George Halas with a capital G and a capital H.
And you said one L.
And I said, yeah, that was in tribute to you, brother. I said one L. It was funny.
Somebody, I thought it was really cool to see those guys with the jerseys on. That was neat. And especially seeing the McMichael jersey. I'm guessing you guys talked about all the Bears fans you saw. I bet you saw a couple other McMichael jerseys and Hester jerseys last night as well. It seemed like everything's working, right? And we heard you guys talked about it, and rightly so, yesterday, I think during this segment, about the operation. And it seems like, on and off the field, the operation's working really well for the Bears right now.
Great night for Bears fans. Great night for Bears players and the organization. A commercial about where they are and where they're headed. The interviews with Ryan Poles. I think Caleb Williams represented himself quite well. But it all started with that kind of respect that we're talking about. Seeing Rome Odunze in the Devin Hester jersey, knowing that he grew up idolizing number 23, was just a cool start to a great night. And we have seen probably more Hester stuff. You know who we, obviously, I think more, even more than Hester representation, Walter Payton still carries the day. There's so many 34 jerseys.
Yes.
It's got to be so cool. We talked to Jarrett Payton yesterday, but to walk by people and he sees, he'll stop and talk to them, but the people wearing 34 jerseys, and to see those busts of these former Bears, from Walter Payton to Sid Luckman, who still looks terrific, you know, cast in bronze in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. This was a night, and this is a weekend to celebrate the history and the heritage of the Chicago Bears, of George Halas, of everybody from Halas to Eberflus, because this is that weekend to do that. The game, yeah, there was a lot of things we'll talk about. There were some takeaways, but not a whole lot to see there. But it all started with the Bears understanding the gravity of this weekend and what it means to everybody.
Yeah, that's a good question.
We've talked about the Bears' lone training camp battle, among the starters being Ryan Bates or Coleman Shelton at the center position. The team's flip card depth chart added two more among that second unit, Tyson Bagent or Brett Rypien at quarterback, Khalil Herbert, Roschon Johnson at running back. Are those reserve battles closer than we might have imagined?
They could be. I don't really know if the case is at running back, what they're planning to do. We'll talk about the kickoff rules. I don't know if Khalil Herbert fits into that mix, or maybe Roschon Johnson does. Dave Wannstedt likes that idea. He said Roschon could be a very, very good kick returner under these new rules. I don't think I was somebody that looked at the depth chart as long as Mully did, and I don't think I interpreted the oars quite the same way. I think that Tyson Bagent has the upper hand based on his experience, based on maybe his even his skill set and the way that he does get rid of the football quickly. You saw a little bit of that last night. You're going to see more of it during the preseason. But I think that Ryan Bates, Coleman Shelton conundrum or that situation bears the most watching because of what we kind of alluded to yesterday as well.
Yep.
We don't know where Nate Davis is.
And not the, on the bus.
The Nate Davis conundrum is still the one thing that will dictate, I think, how the center position battle goes. The other ones, I think, are worth following, but I don't think we learned anything last night that's going to maybe give one guy the edge over the other. It's still, I think, Bajan's job to lose as the backup, and I think Roschon Johnson and Khalil Herbert can still carve out niches on this roster.
Yeah, I liked how hard we saw both Khalil Herbert and Roschon Johnson run last night. Not exactly interchangeable, but I think they both can contribute on special teams as well. We'll see how that one plays out. Bates, Coleman, Shelton, I mean, ask the quarterback, right? I think he's going to have a say in who he receives the ball from. And as far as the backup quarterbacks, I mean, if anything, good for Brett Rypien. You know, you guys made a great point yesterday about putting good tape out there. That's part of what preseason football is all about. Brett Rypien put out some really good tape yesterday. I mean, Tyson Bagent, one series? Is that enough? I don't think so.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't play anybody, so I don't think it counts, really, that he was out there for a series. I got to tell you, I think that the Coleman-Shelton-Ryan Bates battle is also, as you say, impacted by the Nate Davis availability. So it's really interesting to me how they're going to be handling this. I think all these guys are making the team. I don't think that there's any way Tyson Bagent loses his job or Brett Rypien becomes the leader of the Bears. I do think, though, just mentioning the quarterbacks, that the stuff we talked about earlier with quarterbacks going down as early as they are scares the heck out of you and really ought to, because that's going to be the key in this league is who stays healthy. As far as the running backs are concerned, I thought they both look good. I think they both make the team. I don't think it's going to come down to any singular element. It would be matchups, etc. So, listen, there's not a lot of meat on the bone when you don't play your starters, when you don't even throw us a bone with the punter that we've been so if ever there was a guy who we called for, we demanded, they delivered, and now he's not
very
performing for us. It was fun to be here. It's a great event. It's on TV. I'm sure a lot of people tuned in. I don't know how many people stayed with it. I did think that Colin Johnson looked like a pretty good player, but I mean just looked professional, you know, looked like a guy knew what he was doing. Which is nice to see. But in terms of training camp battles, there's only one.
And I do understand your question.
Were you left disappointed by the NFL's new kickoff rule? Will it get better, or is this whole thing being overhyped?
You know, I was mortally wounded that the new kickoff rule. We talked to Dave Tobe yesterday, and he said, I can't wait to see what they're doing. And I even said to you, I'm like, we got the kickoff. There's not a lot. We got the kickoff. At least we'll see. The kickoff was I know it's vanilla. No one's going to show anything. And at some point this year, I imagine we're going to see something spectacular on one of these kickoffs. People have been plotting and planning, and there's been a mad scientist element behind this stuff, but good God, did that stink. That was just, what was the longest return? Like 32 yards? Like it was, just kick it out of the end zone. Let's get on with it.
Well, I like seeing it actually executed, right? We read about it. It was adapted from, the XFL. But to actually see it put into motion, I thought it was interesting. I think it's got some excitement to it. I do. I think listen, everybody likes points. Everybody likes to bet the over. This is going to help you get there.
I was very disappointed because I saw all kinds of possibilities and everything going through my head as we sat there in the press box, watching them line up, and poor Cairo Santos all by himself at one end. The kicker is going to feel very lonely because everyone else is lined up at the other side of the field, and they're in these three-point stances, and they're looking like, okay, which is the way this is going to go? How many different combinations could you see? Because it's going to be very difficult for the people lined up on the right side to ever swarm over to the left side because they don't have a lot of ground to cover to do that. So you think, well, if they only block it this way, the guy could break it, then all of a sudden he's going to run to daylight. It's gone. And then everything kind of fell into place the way it typically falls into place.
It's a slip and fall.
And there was a slip and fall. And I think the turf at the stadium in Canton was credited with two tackles on kickoff returns because that was what you saw, and that was disappointing. There is room for teams to do something, though, once they start to feel more comfortable in how to do it. I was disappointed with the initial look at it, but I don't want to overreact to my initial look at it. I think teams will find ways to exploit something about the configuration and something about the formations, because if that wasn't the case, I don't think guys like Dave Tobe would have been anticipating seeing how it looks in real time as much as he did.
I understand the question.
What was worse, finding out the White Sox turned down a chance to get the number 92 prospect, according to MLB Pipeline, because they did not want to trade Eric Fetty, who will start against the Cubs today, in their division, or learning that they sent $4 million with Eloy Jimenez in the deal with the Orioles?
Well, let's start with that one. I think that, to me, is actually not bad business. If you just want to pay Eloy...
Yeah.
Okay, Eloy,
they got 3.5
tip
million.
Your Uber driver. Here's $4 million. Whatever the case is, you're not giving it to him. You're giving it to the team. But take him off our hands, please. That's what that says. And I think they needed somebody to take him off their hands. So that didn't really bother me. Sometimes it's addition by subtraction. And he, as we have continued to say, was the symbol of the failed rebuild. On the south side, one of them, Michael Kopech being the other. By the way, him striking out the side the other night, wow, 17 pitches, 3 strikeouts, pretty good in L.A. As for the other report, I think Bruce Levine, our guy, pushed back at this online and said that was incorrect. I don't know the details of it. It would seem absurd to pass up a chance to get a prospect just because you're afraid of the Eric Fetty or a pitcher you're trading in the division would succeed against you. I don't know if Dan Hayes, I think, talked about this guy we know well in Minnesota. There's probably more to this story. I can't believe they would do that. I can't believe that they would necessarily get as little as, but I was disappointed on how little they got in return for Fetty. So I would like to explore this a little further and talk to Bruce a little bit more in depth before having a conclusion that Chris Getz blew this one. But it feels like whether these are the details or overall, that the Sox blew a chance to get the most out of Eric Fetty as an asset, because you look at his numbers, and he's pitching tonight against the Cubs, I believe. So you're going to see him in the Cubs division doing some damage.
Yes, this afternoon, 12:45 pregame right here on the Score. First pitch right around 1:20. Eric Fetty going up against Javier Assad. This one's confusing. I could see people being upset at either or both. I guess I might need some more explanation. It feels like the $4 million sent with Eloy, you're not giving it to Eloy, but you're assuming, right? Aren't the Orioles are now giving Eloy the $4 million, so technically aren't you giving Eloy the $4 million? Either way, and I think the first knee-jerk, and jerk being the key word, and I'd raise my hand as being that jerk, if the White Sox traded it within the division, I think we would have buried him on Tuesday or Wednesday, whenever that would have went down.
I don't agree with you. I think that the player in question is named Luke Kuechel, and he's a second baseman outfielder. He is ranked 92 on the top 100 list. There was not a top 100 prospect traded at the trade deadline
by anybody.
If indeed the White Sox came out of it with this kid, I would not complain. A second baseman, outfielder, first baseman. He can play different positions, and he's apparently got good hit tools. I would not complain if they got a top 100 prospect for a pitcher, even if you sent him. He's only got one more year after this if you sent him to Minnesota. So it wouldn't break my heart. I wouldn't care. I'd make a deal with anyone to get the best player in return. I was heartily disappointed that the White Sox got rid of Eric Fetty in a three-team deal with two 19-year-olds and a kind of hyped but failed prospect coming in return, an MLB player, and we'll see how he does. But I think they could have done better with those if they traded them individually, including this guy for Fetty. I'd have no problem with it if they'd done it. As far as Aloy is concerned, they're paying $4 million of his remaining salary, and the Orioles pick up $3.5 million. So basically, they took $3.5 million and gave it to Jerry Reinsdorf instead of Aloy Jimenez. That's basically what they did.
Sunk cost.
That's it. Sunk cost. They got something back for it, and that is really all it was. I'm glad they did something, but let's be honest about it. What we're waiting on here is something bigger than that.
Something bigger than that. And I think they have not done what this says to me as much as anything is they have not earned the benefit of the doubt. So totally when these reports come out, you're finding them easy to believe.
And again, ask yourself that one question. Are you better afterward?
What do you make of the four-letter network speculation that Pedro Grifol will lose his job by Monday? And how badly do you want the T-shirt honoring the Sox losing streak with Pedro Grifol?
Let me tell you, I love it, Dustin. We were laughing so hard when we saw this T-shirt. It was like Grifol over the, like it's the name, but just L's going around in a circle.
17 L's.
Oh, my God, 17 L's. You know, here's the problem. We don't know how many more you need. I don't know if you're going to win a game this weekend. I don't know if you're going to be able to beat the Cubs for a game. I don't know how long this – it feels like they may lose out. And it feels like this is the worst team that maybe people have ever seen assembled. The season is going on. The losing now is habitual. And it doesn't feel like there's a way out of it. As far as firing Pedro goes, I mean, I'm kind of in the camp with our buddy Rick Morrissey from the Chicago Sun-Times. That Jerry at this point is just kind of he's just having a laugh. He doesn't care, and his answer to those complaining about all the losing is to stick with Pedro. So, I mean, should the guy? First of all, it's not his fault. You don't blame it all on him. Second of all, he's absolutely useless. He should never have been hired, and no team is going to sit with a guy that has got a losing percentage like Pedro does over 2 years. It's just heartily comical. He's matched the dentist who took over the Phillies during World War II. Some dentist actually just kind of helped out and ended up managing for 2 years. And he's the only guy that has as bad a
Phillies?
Record as Pedro.
The Phillies manager?
I think
that
he was
season?
With the Phillies. Yeah, whatever, 1930 something.
Every game that year felt like a trip to the dentist. Literally.
Beautiful. Yeah, that's beautiful.
Dustin.
Well,
he's pregnant pause. Dustin wants everyone to know he's about to speak. One, two, three, go.
Okay, thanks. Jeez Louise, you guys are magic this morning. Yeah, I mean, that shirt's awesome. I who wouldn't want that shirt? Why now, though, right? Like, why would you do? Because of going back to the last question, the sunk cost? Like, now all of a sudden they've got enough money to pay the guy off because of the Eloy Jimenez? Why now? But the T-shirt, very funny.
The T-shirt would be a souvenir you would want to have from a historically futile season.
Yes.
And you could see being... having that in a drawer, having that in a frame or whatever the case is. But that is kind of funny, well done, and sad, but kind of hilarious in a way. They would be doing Pedro Grifol a favor by letting him be relieved of his duties now, sooner rather than later. There's nothing that you need to wait for. And I think that they would almost feel merciful because this is painful. And I feel bad for him every time he does talk. He is overmatched for the job. But I think that it becomes almost redundant to continue to point that out. And whenever he talks about after another loss, it feels very painfully redundant to hear him explain what happened this night and how they found another way to lose. I also think from a practical standpoint, we heard from AJ Pierzynski in response to the Bob Nightingale rumor said, I can't talk about this job. They still have a manager. Well, if they don't have a manager, then AJ could talk about the job, and so could other people who might be candidates, and so could we collectively talk about, well, who might be next and who would be somebody the Sox would target. Terry Francona, Skip Schumacher, maybe AJ Pierzynski, or whoever it is next, that would be the source of a lot of speculation. So I think if it is inevitable, and it is, there's really nothing to wait for.
There's not really a good way to answer that question, to be honest.
No good way to answer the question. Cubs walked off the Cardinals last night to start a four-game series. But does it mean much at this point?
Probably not. The Cubs are who they are, and they are in the standings. You can't make one game mean more than it does. You can't do the math. But if this turns out to be the second season in a row that a talk-off or a play by Mike Tauchman in the ninth inning against the Cardinals leads to something special or leads to a September full of drama, I'll take it. And we can point to this game. But how many times, Dustin, have we said, we can point to this game? And we, I think, have believed things that didn't turn out to be true. And it's easy to get carried away when you see him getting doused with the water and getting his shirt torn off, Christopher Morel style. I wonder how Jim Edmonds feels about that celebration when they were doing that. Tauchman at the at home plate, shirtless, doing his post-game interview with Elise Menneker. But anyway, I would like to see these things. I don't know if it is a mirage or not, but the best way to figure out and keep this hope alive is to win today against Eric Fetty, the aforementioned Eric Fetty.
Well said, David. The best thing to do is do it again today. I guess Mother Nature helped me out because since the Bears game was in a delay, I actually went over there and then quickly called. I saw the Bellinger home run and said, okay, better stay awake. Here we go. And it paid off. So another talk off, and I think that might have given the Palatine Pounder another year with the Cubs with his ability to help them beat the Cardinals.
Bellinger 2-for-4 with a couple of doubles. Suzuki 2-for-4. He homered too, Bellinger. Suzuki 2-for-4 with like the longest home run ever seen by man.
459 feet.
Pretty awesome home run for him. And then, this was the big one. Nico Swanson 2-for-3 with a couple RBI and a double. I mean, that's
one heck of a double play combination.
I'm just saying.
Nico Swanson.
You need those guys to Dansby Swanson. You need those guys to. I'm more concerned about Mallory Swanson. You need those guys to do that kind of thing. And that's how you put together a little bit of a run here. If he can get hot, if Suzuki can stay hot, if you get what you're paying for from Bellinger, that's the only way that we're going to see the Cubs turn anything around. The starting pitching has been great. Shota not so much last night. Nonetheless, they managed to win the game. They managed to walk it off. And I got to tell you, Dustin, I got to imagine it feels good to beat the Cardinals no matter what. So it's nice to see it happen.
Always.
Maybe it starts something. We'll
and
see.
Jed Hoyer saying the other day on the Parkins and Spiegel show was interesting that the Cubs have pitched well enough to be a contender.
Yeah.
Only reinforced how disappointing the offense has been.
Exactly.
And
right.
The season has become. But Dansby Swanson coming through in the clutch in the ninth inning, not something we have seen enough of this year.
We've got the extra point next. It's a good one. It's Mully and Haw at Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.